Chapter 24. Tika. I wake shivering on the floor, still lying in the place I fell. They didn't kill me. I suppose it's a victory of sorts. It was the first day, and I fought, as Mika bade. I will live to see the second. I imagine it will be very much like the first. It's hard to focus on that distant worry, though, when the cold is here, now. I always imagined the desert to be eternally hot, but learned on the journey that the night quickly grows chill when the sun sets and the heat leaches away. The floor of the Shiraj is cut below ground level to offer a cooler space during the day. But in the night, I understand now how coveted the scarce blankets I saw on the floor must be. I open my eyes, but it takes some time to adjust to the dim moonlight. I can make out Jadan in the spot closest to where I lay. He is the only one who sleeps alone, wrapped in two blankets. Others huddle in groups of three or four beneath the remaining blankets, and the remainder sleep skin to skin in shifting piles, pooling their body heat. Slowly, painfully, I roll to my knees. I'm cold, but I don't dare join one of the piles, even those with younger students. Instead, I crawl until I can put my back to a wall, hugging my legs close. I catch bits of sleep, but there is no way to tell if they are seconds, minutes, or hours. Again and again, I am awakened by pain and discomfort. Each time I jolt, looking around frantically to ensure I am not threatened, then allow exhaustion to pull me back down. The call to prayer cuts through the haze, a high-pitched song that is both beautiful and jarring, designed to pull worshippers from the clutches of sleep to give praise to Evram. The Nisharum all rise and begin to file out of the room, beginning with Shadan, then the older, stronger boys who shared blankets, and finally the younger, weaker ones who slept in sweaty piles. "Come, Greenblood," Thivan says. "You will be on time for prayers, or Cheekga will have both our hides." I follow the other boys into a training yard, where the drill masters are already kneeling. Their bodies are at rest, but their eyes watch as the boys file into the yard and kneel in neat rows. The strongest are in the front, the weakest in back. I kneel next to Thivan, close to the center. When the last boy has taken his place, the drill masters begin making their obeisance. Facing toward Anok's son, the ancient city of the Deliverer, they press foreheads to the ground, whispering prayers. I know the words from Krasian studies, but the prayers mean little to me. Mother gave clerics a place in her court, but she was not a practitioner. "There is power in faith, and we must show it respect," Mother used to say. "But a leader cannot be ruled by holy men, or depend on the divine to build bridges and collect the trash." I've always felt the same, never believing there was some cosmic will watching over the world. I haven't said a serious prayer since I was a young child. But here, under the watchful eyes of the drill masters, I do not want to call any more attention to myself than I already have. What difference does it make if I speak the words to a creator who does not exist? "Evram, giver of life and light, grant me strength." When prayers are over, the drill masters rise and begin leading morning Sharusak. The poses are different from the low, graceful ones I am familiar with. These are fast and violent, kicks and punches more suited to fighting other humans than demons. Thivan scowls, but after a glance at Cheekga, he comes over to me. "Like this," he assumes a pose, correcting my stance, then takes me through the rest of the forms of the Sharukin, kicking my feet and pulling my arms into the proper positions. He even fights like a woman, one of the boys says, and others snicker until the drill master looks their way. As we practice, I begin to see the power in the simple moves. They lack the precision of the styles I've studied, using weight and brute force over finesse. Given warning and room to maneuver, a Dharma Ting could kill even a drill master in single combat. But a dozen Sharum, charging down a narrow hall, would mow down a like number of Dharma Ting like wheat before the scythe. So I listen and I learn, throwing myself into the practice. Why shouldn't I learn to kick and punch like Sharum? It will be easier to blend in if I can fight like a man. When the exercise is over, Thevan leads me to where an old woman, face and head wrapped in a black Dal Ting scarf, stands over a great pot, spooning a brown slop into bowls. Like the blankets, the pot looks too small to feed us all. That's our tika. Thevan nods at the old woman. She does the cooking and distributes clean bidos once a week. Do not offend her, or you will regret it. I haven't the slightest idea what would offend a woman like that, but I have a more pressing question. Why isn't there enough food? Fort Crazier's walls surround a great oasis, with fertile land and abundant fruit trees. Perhaps it was not enough when the city's population was teeming, but for just the Maja, there seems no reason why any should go hungry. Because the drill masters want us strong, Thevan says. They want us to fight, to lie, cheat, and steal when we must. They want us to do whatever it takes to survive, because it will prepare us to fight twice as hard to survive the night. I'm sickened by the idea. The drill masters torture these boys to turn them into weapons against demons. Is this what was done to Mika? To my father? Thevan moves to the center of the line, meeting eyes with another boy, who steps back to make room without challenging him. I try to follow, but the boy quickly closes the gap, shoving me away. Back of the line, push Ting. I look to Thevan, but he only laughs. The drill master said to show you our ways, not fight your battles. Accept Parcoat's challenge, or go to the back of the line. I look back to Parcoat, his hands and feet set in an unfamiliar stance. He is thin like the others, but his place in line says he is fed and rested, while my stomach roils with hunger and my body is a mass of bruises. I can feel the scabbing on my back, thin and stiff, and know that if I exert myself, it will tear once more. But a glance at the back of the line offers no comfort. The boys there are pale things, ashen skin lighter than my own, pulled tight over visible bones. They stare at me with sunken eyes, and I know that giving in will mean becoming one of them. On the other end of the line, Chadan already has his bow, but he watches me with interest. Fight, Mika whispers. Every day, fight. I turn to meet Parcoat's eyes. Step back. I don't even finish speaking before Parcoat leaps forward, leading with a flurry of punches. Remembering Chadan's deadly mix of strikes, throws, and submission holds, I keep my guard up, evading blows while I take Parcoat's measure. He's aggressive, looking to power through a fight on pure ferocity. A novice fights their opponent, Mika taught, but a master lets their opponent fight themselves. Parcoat is wasting energy, trying to bring the fight to a quick end. I catch his arm on the next pass, twisting to use the force of his swing against him. He hits the dusty ground hard, and his shoulder comes free of its socket with an audible pop. Parcoat screams, writhing in the dust and clutching his unnaturally twisted arm. The boys behind him in line recoil in horror, while those in front snigger. My face goes cold. I hadn't meant to dislocate his shoulder. Chikga appears, and the Nisha room immediately straighten. I slip into Parkot's spot in line, hoping to draw less attention. Parkot is still writhing and moaning as the drill master drops to one knee to examine him.
Everarm's balls, quit whining!
Chikga begins his examination by cuffing Parko in the face.
Embrace the pain and be silent, or I will show you real pain.
Parkot's face reddens, and his jaw clenches, biting back his moans as Chikga lifts his twisted arm. He puts a knee into Parkot's chest to keep him immobilized as he works the shoulder back into its socket. There is another pop, and the arm locks into place. Parkot thrashes once, then goes limp, passed out from pain. Chikga shakes his head and spits in the dust as he gets to his feet.
He'll have a sore arm when he wakes, he says to no one in particular, but it will obey him.
His eyes scan the line of boys, coming to rest on me. He notes my place in line, and that Parkot collapsed just a few feet from where I stand. I tense, expecting some sort of punishment. But Chikga says nothing. He turns away and returns to the company of the other drill masters, who are partaking of a much more appetizing morning repast. My reward for almost crippling a boy I just met is a ladle of thick brown gruel in my bowl. It smells rank. Even so, I meet Tika's gaze. Thank you. Tika's eyes narrow in suspicion. She raises her ladle threateningly. You're not getting more, new boy. Go eat while it's warm.
Yes, Tika.
I nod, but it's hard to contain my surprise. Tika returns to her work, and I realize every bowl has a little less than the one before. Chadan and his entourage received full bowls at the front of the line. Farther down the line, mine is barely half full. What will be left for the ones at the back?
That was well done, Thivan says as we look for a place to sit and eat. What a laugh to see Parkot put down like a dog.
I'm barely listening, watching the bowls empty as the line dwindles. The second-to-last boy barely has the bottom of his bowl coated, but he immediately puts his face into it, licking up every bit of moisture. Tika flicks her ladle into the last boy's bowl, but only a single drop strikes the clay.
Please, Tika, the boy begs.
The pot is empty, Tika says.
Please,
the boy says again.
Just let me lick the ladle, anything.
He reaches for the ladle's handle, but Tika wields it deftly, spinning it out of reach and using it to crack the boy on the wrist. He cries out in pain, snatching the hand back.
You want to eat? Tika snaps. Don't wait at the back of the line.
Thivan and the others laugh as the boy walks away, dejected. I feel ill at the sight of his ribs, visible through thin skin stretched tight over bone. I recognize him from last night. He kicked me in my own ribs just a few hours ago. Yet looking at him now, I can't help but feel pity. He must have been desperate to gain some level of status before hunger caused him to be cast out. What happened to me isn't his fault. I step into his path, and the boy comes up short, fear in his eyes. What is your name?
Fasik, the boy says.
Take my gruel, Fasik. I push the clay bowl into his hands. I'm not hungry. Fasik gapes at me for a moment, then bobs his head.
Thank you.
That was stupid, Thivan sneers as Fasik runs off with his prize. Now you're going to go hungry. I turn to him.
No, I'm not, Thivan. You're going to give me your bowl.
He freezes, and I smile, nodding at Parkot, still passed out on the ground.
Unless you want to end up next to Parkot?
Boy, come with me. Tika does not slow as she passes by,
I throw back the remaining gruel and hand the empty bowl to the van. One of his eyes is fast swelling. He glares at me with the other, but now he knows better than to show his teeth. Tika is a Croatian term of affection for grandmothers. I don't fully understand her place in Sharaj, but until I do, it seems wise to obey as if she were a drill master. I hop to my feet and fall into step behind her. She takes me to a stone alcove where a bowl of steaming water sits beside a cake of soap, some folded cloth, and a razor. Sit. Tika points to a mat on the floor. I do, and she sits upon a bench behind me, throwing a cloth over my shoulders. Tika massages warm soap onto my scalp through the patchwork of hair, and it feels heavenly. I tense as she lifts the razor, drawing a sharp breath as the cold metal scrapes along my skin. I'm horrified at the sensation. I've always been so proud of my hair. Black and thick, it shone like the polished obsidian of a rock demon's armor. So dark, it gave life to even the simplest ornaments, and long enough to reach my waist braided. Now it's all gone. The last wisps falling in sudsy clots onto the cloth. The sensation of her fingers running over the skin around my skull is alien, pleasurable and discomforting at the same time. I turn my head and lean over, looking at my reflection in the water bowl. A stranger looks back at me. Their eyes are familiar, but without hair, my whole face looks different, especially now when it is puffed and bruised. I don't know who I am anymore, but Princess Olive is gone. Tika gives me a moment to stare, then pulls my head back so she can continue her work. Every boy stares the first time. You'll get used to it. I don't suppose I have a choice, I say. Tika snorts. You should be higher in line. I look over my shoulder. Why do you say that? Tika's hands are surprisingly strong as she twists my head to face front. I've been watching boys fight in the gruel line longer than you've been alive, boy. I know when someone's holding back. I don't want to hurt anyone, I say. I could have crippled Parkot. Ah! He would have done as much to you. She scrapes another patch of hair, flicking it off the razor and onto the cloth. You should be behind Shadan in line, with a full bowl every meal. Why not in front of him? I ask. Psst, Tika says. You are not ready for that, and you'll find no allies against him. Your family name is feared among the Marja, but it is not loved as his. He made all this clear to me last night. The words come through gritted teeth. That is good, Tika says. Now that the other boys know he is your better, Shadan has no need to bully you. And he does not enjoy it, as some others do. He won't lift a finger if you challenge anyone below him. So long as you defer to him, you will not go hungry. Don't offend her, Thivan warned. But I have no idea what offends a woman who will let children go hungry in front of her. I've heard tales of beggars, but they always seemed distant things. After guiding her people through the privations of war, Mother would sell her own crown before she allowed an empty belly in Hollow. Fight, Mika whispers, and my next words come in a rush. Why must anyone go hungry? It's a mercy. Tika's hands continue their steady work. Some boys do not have the hearts of warriors. They are safer as Kafit than in a demon's belly. How can they learn their hearts, I ask, if the smallest and weakest are never allowed to grow strong? Heart doesn't keep Alagai talons at bay, Tika says. I've watched a lot of boys walk into the maze over the years. Some come back blooded as men. Others, usually the smallest and the weakest, don't come back at all.
And if they die begging on the street instead? I ask.
In Evora, Tika says.
But I see in her eyes, it isn't so simple.
You could fill every bowl equally if you wanted, I say.
If I wished to turn the drill master's eyes off the boys and onto me.
Tika's voice is sharp.
Boys in the gruel line may fear me, but I assure you, Chika does not.
I am an idiot, blaming an old woman for not standing up to the drill masters when I myself fear to.
Of course you are correct, Tika, I say. I apologize.
Tika snorts again.
You're really not like the other boys.
She takes up the cloth to wipe away the remaining suds of shorn hair.
I remember our short years in the Greenlands. For a moment, we all wondered what a generation raised in plenty could have made of us.
Am I a disappointment? I ask, surprised to discover I care what she will say.
Tika shakes her head.
I wish all our children could live so. But you will need to harden yourself if you are to survive here.